Everybody's ego takes a shot on this show.
You gotta keep your chill with Jim, Matt, and Molly.
I am savage.
So you're not special.
Jim, if we want to play this game, we can play this game.
And I'm just like, my God, this guy's gonna swing on right. Jim. He's a complicated fellow.
People like me.
Yeah, I don't think so.
This is Jim, Matt, and Molly. Presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN.
We're learning a lot about each other.
I'm going to match your energy, and if you're going to bring false titles, I'll bring false titles.
They're not false. Your six are real. My four are real.
But they're old as hell.
So you can tell Rutledge that. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Amen.
Because I'm here for whatever. If you get food poisoning from a place, do you go back?
Like, for more food?
No, if you go back ever. Like, yeah. Like you get a bad burger from a place.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison, alongside America's favorite Alex, Alex Gravatt, here's Jim Rutledge.
It is Jim, Matt, and Molly.
We are in the Everlight Solar Studio. We are presented by Coors Light. Alex G., if the mountains are blue, you know what to do.
And that's Crush, a Coors Light.
Like I said, he is Alex G., I am Jim Rutledge.
Primetime, war shine behind the glass. Prime, good to have you back. Just taking a vacation day yesterday? What's going on?
Oh, certainly a vacation day. No, I was just busy in the morning. What can I say? I didn't get much sleep. I was in for Willie and Tausch. They didn't listen to me all morning. All Tausch wanted to do is listen to Liam Cohen say, Duval.
What was Tausch's take on that?
Oh, it's... Tausch said that the Jacksonville Jaguars are now his second favorite team because of this. Favorite non-Packers team.
Did you see that
he redid it today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just as bad.
Yep.
He needs to stop.
He's like leaning into the fact that Jacksonville, the Jaguars, are just like a cringy program.
And I can
lean into the meme.
I can kind of
figure out through context clues what aura means, but like they're basically talking about Liam Cohen having negative aura. Because every clip, it honestly seems like a Saturday Night Live skit. Of every clip, his interaction with every player, his interaction like in the office, where he's like, wow, look at this office. Wow. My dad would be impressed. Like, the whole thing is just
Hey, I mean, like, cringe. You've got me and Pablo working here in ESPN Madison, and we are almost that cringy in the things that we do. We are goofy.
Yeah, you're goofy, not cringy.
Okay.
Like, I just don't understand. Again, I will thank my lucky stars as a Bears fan. He screamed Bears higher. And, like, that, for me, and this is going back to, like, I was like, I'll take McCarthy. Because I would take this. Like, the Bears normally, instead of hiring the offense, the coordinator of the year, Ben Johnson just won that. Instead of hiring that guy, who you've coached against, week in your division rival, and a guy who the last 2 years has been the number one guy as far as assistance on the open market, and you pass on him and picking Liam Cohen, like, that's the Bears' move.
I wonder if Packer fans, because I don't know where I land on this, are we rooting for Ben Johnson to beat the Lions or for the Lions to just smash the Bears and Ben Johnson? Prime, do you have any thoughts on that?
That's tough. Like, which division rival do you want to beat the other more?
Well, a little bit, but like, there's also kind of this cool story where you have the guy who's been focused on becoming a head coach and doing all the right things, and then he goes and he gets that coaching spot, and so he's like this up-and-coming dude, and that's interesting. Maybe he could beat his old team as long as the Packers beat him.
Yes.
Or do you just want to see him, like, absolutely flounder after what I thought was a goofy press conference?
I would say the Bears being better and possibly eating into the Lions would be better for the Packers, because it's the Lions, at least over the past 2 years, have been the bigger contender, and therefore the Bears could get better. I think the odds of them going from like bad to contender quickly would be less than the Lions, so therefore I'd rather the Bears eat into the Lions' apple a little bit more.
So not a lot of Big J journalism, Jason Wilde-style, non-fan vibes going on there. You're not rooting for either of the storylines. You're just thinking what's best for the Packers.
Felt like Green Bay to me.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Especially in the division. Yeah, I'm not really going to be like, oh, storylines like these guys. It's like, no, it's the Vikings, the Lions, and the Bears. I want all of them to lose at all times. Yes.
I get all that. And the Bears, like, best case scenario for them, looking on paper, is that they do what, like, the Chargers kind of did this year, or what the Packers did their first year without Aaron Rodgers, of you get that 9 wins, maybe you catch the last playoff spot because of what's going on. Like, they're not going to jump from 5 wins to they're not going to go from 5-11 to 11-5 or 5-12 to 12-5. Like, that's not going to happen. Could they get to 9-10 wins? That's a realistic ceiling for them next year. Like, I think that's now the Packers and the Lions, we talked about this yesterday, have a higher ceiling, in my opinion. And then the Vikings are the one team the Bears could possibly jump. And barring injuries, again, I'm going Lions, Packers, Vikings, Bears. Maybe they're all just better. But I actually, we're going to get to a couple different questions in today's show. You can see us on ESPN Madison's YouTube. But I want to throw this out. As the Packers hired former New England Patriots defensive coordinator DeMarcus Covington as their defensive line coach, and then they promoted Sean Mannion to quarterbacks coach, and Sean Mannion was like a assistant last year, like a assistant to the assistant, and so I don't know. That seems fine. I think Packer fans would have preferred a Scott Tolzien and Bobby Slowick in that position. Just for why not hire a more established guy. And I say this fully, like, this is not an important position. I mean, it is,
well,
but it is.
Because that's something that, a space that you need the Packers to step up
in. If Jordan Love is what Packer fans think he is, the quarterback coach is not making or breaking him now.
Right.
And so, this is someone that should be a confidant. Like, there are plenty, you can't go around the league and name a lot of quarterbacks coaches.
No.
Could he be the veteran backup that the Packers don't have for
right.
him, essentially.
And so, like, I don't mind them. I don't have any real take on the move. Slowick and Tolzien would have been more established hires, but whatever. Look, I'm going through this as my own fan base, and people are nitpicking the passing game coordinator. Like, at some point, we just have to kind of let it go on some of these hires. But I do want to ask this, because Tausha brought it up the other day, and he's basically wish-casting that Dan Campbell won't be able to replace his coordinators. But that does miss the fact that Dan Campbell is one for one. Like, these coordinators, he hired and brought them in when he came in.
Okay, you mean, like, as in he's nailed it once
in
the Detroit organization.
Yes, and so you look at LaFleur. LaFleur has had to fire more coordinators than Dan Campbell's ever had to hire. So if you're looking at the status of these organizations and the coach and the head coach, you would have more faith in Dan Campbell building a staff than Coach LaFleur, right?
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. And that was something I was thinking about. Like, is LaFleur the kind of guy that people are excited to go play under? Because you have this exact
coach
situation.
Let's keep it coaching for now.
That's what I meant. And you see that Ben Johnson and the guy who was the defensive coordinator, whose name I'm blanking on, they both went out and got new jobs. They're exciting. People are excited about them.
Aaron Glenn, yeah.
They both had fantastic years, so you want to go play for them. But I think as a whole, I would still have some reservations about what the Detroit Lions have been for so long. And despite their success lately, you know, you'd have to have a lot of confidence in yourself and what you bring to the table to show up there and be the coach, where, you know, an offensive coordinator. Whereas in Green Bay, they consistently turn out pretty good teams. And so maybe there's less pressure on me. Maybe they have more ability to be a good team. But you know that everyone is calling for your head if you're the defensive coordinator immediately.
Yes, and so you can chime in on this. We don't need to pop this up as a Siding Unlimited poll question on ESPN Madison's Twitter or at Jim, Matt, and Molly, but 844-770-3776, that's the Carbos Talking text line. List is more. Who do you think, who does a better job hiring assistants, Dan Campbell or Coach LaFleur? And Dan Campbell, and I believe, I'll give credit to where I heard it, it was Adam Hoge from Hoge and John's podcast with The Athletic, is he was doing some stuff for the Bears talking about the best coordinator hires. And it's someone who has been a coordinator. Like, for an example, the hire of DeMarcus Covington, having someone who's been a defensive coordinator to be your D-line coach, that is a good box to check. Now, the negative box is there's no real crossover with LaFleur, so they haven't really worked together. I don't know if Covington's worked with anyone else on the staff. Like, so that's a negative, that he hasn't really worked with the rest of the staff, but it's less important for, like, a line coach than it is for, like, your defensive coordinator. Like, the defensive coordinator hired Jeff Hafley. That was a little bit, like, there was not a direct connect. But it worked. But those are, like, get a little bit dicier. The promotion of Sean Mannion, now again, this is quarterback coach, not OC, but even the promotion of Stanovich and bringing back Getsy is, all right, you have connections with these guys, you know them. So when you're trying to hire people that either you're promoting or someone that you've worked with before, or then someone like, again, like the halfway fits this part. He was a head coach, and then he's going to defensive coordinator. So you can kind of run the defense. So there's been some good hires, but LaFleur hasn't fallen under that.
And he also brought in Robert Saleh this past year, which I think that was, it ended up being an impactful thing throughout the course of the season. It's definitely
helpful. So you're worried that he's not around then this year?
I'm not worried, but I you know, I understand why that happened, right? There is no defensive coordinator to be. You know, the fact that we got him for half a season, I think, was good because it, A, built that relationship stronger. It increases, you know, the things that everyone in that room learned, because Robert Saleh is a good defensive coordinator. He has been fantastic. The Jets, despite being, you know, a terrible franchise last year, I learned during Minute to Win It, had a fantastic defense. Who knew? They were pretty good. They didn't play a whole lot, and teams didn't have to run up the score on them because they couldn't score because Aaron Rodgers is in
that. The Jets have had a good defense for a couple years.
But so, exactly. Yeah. They've been good. And so you get, you know, at least a little bit of something out of that, and I think that that's a credit to LaFleur for bringing him in.
844-770-3776. You can chime in. It's a Siding Unlimited poll question. I don't know if we need to post it on social, just because it's going to be a landslide. Nobody's going to pick.
Do you think so? I think people are still jaded with Joe Barry. They're jaded with Rich Bisaccia, especially after he got his extension.
Okay, we can post it then.
I think it's a worthwhile question. I mean, they had to fire the D-line coach, Jason Rebrovich, after 3 years of no production from Rashawn Gary and others.
Fans aren't thrilled with the Bisaccia. And then Clements, like, that's a LaFleur hire, but that's also like, I'm coming home.
And he had been with the franchise.
That's
since
what I mean. Like,
Brett
that's
Favre.
Like that's like coming home sort of thing.
Yeah, that doesn't count. That's a legacy.
Yeah. So we can ask a question. Who do you think does a better job hiring assistants, LaFleur or Dan Campbell? Because Dan Campbell hired these assistants who are being poached away. Now, with Detroit, to the point of they're hiring John Morton as their offensive coordinator. He was with Detroit as of like 2 years ago working with Ben Johnson. They kept their offensive line coach, and they kept their passing game coordinator, and they kept their QB coach. So they kept, I mean, Ben Johnson, by all accounts, is obviously a little bit of a wonder kid, at least on paper, as offensive coordinator. And so there could be a step back there, but at the same time, it might not be massive because Morton has experience. He knows these players. He knows this offense. It might not be as creative or zany as it has been, but it still can be effective. But then also the rest of the staff is staying.
Right. And I think, you know, for the Lions' sake, even there's a chance that getting a little bit less zany is good. They tried to be a little too fancy a bunch of times, and some of it worked out, some it did not.
Mark Brunell staying with the Lions, I think, is important. He's their QB coach. Mm-hmm. He's been around the same time with Jared Goff. They did lose their assistant QB coach, but JT Barrett was working more with Hendon Hooker than he was with Jared Goff. So keeping Brunell around is important. The passing game coordinator is staying around is important. The most important part, the offensive line coach staying. And then you look at defensively, they promoted Kelvin Shepard to defensive coordinator. Now, Shepard's on the staff. Defensive coordinators, to me, are so much harder to nail down if they're good or not, because I think it's about culture and discipline. So Aaron Glenn did that as a coordinator. But outside of Spagnuolo and maybe a few others, like Jeff Hafley would fall into this. I think he set a good culture and the team was more disciplined. Is he some sort of play calling whiz and some sort of defensive guru? No. Maybe he'll get there, but there's only like a few.
Right.
Vic Fangio being one of them and Spagnuolo being another one. But there's just not, and they're usually around for a long time.
And you need a guy in the middle, a middle linebacker, a captain of the defense who knows what the heck is going on and can, you know, opt into different plays and designs.
Part of it too. But so, I mean, and this is not against knock against Halfway. I'm just saying that like Dan Campbell, because here's the other part of it. Dan Campbell would fall into the category of like John Harbaugh, a culture setter. Or even honestly, Jim Harbaugh. Like Jim Harbaugh is not reviewed as like, I wouldn't call Jim Harbaugh some sort of offensive wizard. He's a culture setter who then hires the right assistants, do the things he doesn't want to do.
Absolutely.
At Michigan or wherever. But like, and John Harbaugh.
Who hires photographer?
Right. Yeah.
Sock stealing.
So John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, Dan Campbell. I'm trying to think of Belichick was this as well.
Oh, like, sure.
There were guys who were, you're setting the tone. And you are a tone setter. Mike Vrabel's like this. And Mike Vrabel, as I said before, not an offensive coach. His OCs were LaFleur and Arthur Smith. Both guys who, LaFleur, a great coach. Arthur Smith is unquestionably a good offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And so he could identify talent.
And that's one of the things that, you know, you keep coming back to with LaFleur.
Pete Carroll will be another name there.
Oh, absolutely. With LaFleur, it's like, is he the tone setter? Because he's a wonder kid as an offensive coordinator. He's a genius. I like what he does there. He clearly has control of the locker room, and the team continues to be fairly successful. We haven't seen a Super Bowl yet, but you know, he's out there doing the right things, but is he truly setting the tone in the locker room? Because you have a bigger problem with Jair Alexander than I do. I think most people do. I think I give a little bit of credit to Jair, but maybe he didn't need that surgery. Maybe he is a bit too much of a diva. Where's the punish? Like, obviously, we see he got the one-game suspension, same with Lazard, but it keeps happening where people are so upset that they feel that they can take things into their own hands. And is LaFleur setting the tone saying that's inexcusable or not?
So off of that,
Dobbs? My apologies.
Yeah. But also to the idea that this brings up a bigger question. And again, for me, as a fan of a bad team that cycles through coaches, we're in this perpetual, do you want culture setter? Do you want leader of men type? Do you want defensive coordinator? Do you want offensive coach? And offensive coaches have the highest variance, I think. Like Shanahan, obviously, and then you had McVay and LaFleur is successful. And then you have O'Connell. So, and these are all first, they're all successful as their first time being a head coach. And so that obviously works. There's been, you know, Mark Trestman, Adam Gase. There's the long list of other, Josh McDaniels. The other ones have just flamed out. And it's hard to fully nail down what they're going to be. I think all you can do, and I'm sure the Packers did this, of like talk to everyone, talk to as many people as you can who played for that offensive coordinator. Talk to as many people that they knew growing up. Like, what were they as a player if they played football? What were they as an assistant? What was their work ethic? What was their... Because even if you're not fully developed as a leader, if you're doing, like, LaFleur with the Commanders, if you're not fully developed as a leader there, but you're putting in that work ethic, and then you kind of, over time, develop your leadership style, that's... Leadership is not LaFleur's strength. He builds a... It's not a massive weakness. I would say it's...
I've seen some of his post-game interviews and press conferences.
Would you guys say that his leadership abilities are limited?
Yeah, he was limited.
I wouldn't say limited. Like,
yeah, on a limited basis.
His deficiency to me is hiring coordinators.
But Jeff Hafley seems to be a pretty good hire.
But this is your third time through.
Right.
And your offensive coordinators
are basically... He didn't hire Mike Patton, though. He inherited Mike Patton.
Okay.
So he did keep him.
He kept him.
He also
him,
had
yes.
to cycle through a special
and Mike
teams
Patton
coach.
Had a yes. fantastic
and his assistants have been trash when they leave. So that would be more of he is a good play caller. Hackett and gets like his assistants offensively when they leave are terrible.
And Hackett was, again, an Aaron Rodgers thing more than anything. Like Aaron Rodgers is trying to play GM.
That's, not with that's the Packers, it. Though. It was Getsy and Hackett with the Packers for most. Like that was that.
They
window.
Had been there before LaFleur.
I know that, but like he still had a choice to keep them.
True.
So I would say, and again, I'm not saying it's the deficiencies. I'm not saying he's deficient, like below average, but his deficiencies would be hiring head coach and leadership. His positive is he builds a great system, connects with develops quarterbacks, develops. He's a good developer on offense, and he's a good play caller and offensive. What's the word here? Like schematics. Like he creates a good offense. He develops offensive players, and he sets. And that is what his strength is. That would be his plus. And I think the other ones, if you don't want to call them deficiencies, they'd just be that flat line of like, it's fine, like, as leadership.
Limited.
Yeah, on a limited basis.
He has a high floor amongst all things, I think. I mean, like, it's not like he's got basement deficiencies where you've got a glaring, like, should not hire red circle. And that's why he got the job after, you know.
Yeah, he's not deficient. Well, and this is the other part of it. He got the job because he did a good job with Tannehill, and like they liked it. And like you're gonna get your job, like they're gonna hope that you can lead. But it's off for as a coordinator. It's gonna be what did you do? And he was a good offensive coordinator, and he got the job because he was doing a good job the 1 year he called plays. So he's not deficient. He's just his deficiencies doesn't mean he's deficient or below average at him. But I would say he's only plus on developing offensive schemes and players.
That's the only thing
basis.
That he's plus on. I wouldn't call him a negative on anything, but I wouldn't call him a plus on anything but that.
He's a B plus at the very least.
No, I said plus. It's either plus or minus. A plus, equal, or minus. I'm only calling him a plus on the play calling, developing offenses, play calling, and developing offensive players.
Ryan, were you on Monday, did you have that stat about B being tied with Nick Sirianni for most wins or something like that?
I think through their first whatever many games, they had the exact same record.
Yeah, one had Aaron Rodgers and one didn't. Like,
yes, that is a big difference.
And I'm not saying Nick Sirianni's plus on anything. Like, I don't know if Nick Sirianni's the plus on a single thing.
He's supposed to be that culture guy, CEO type.
So maybe that's what he is. So getting back to the question,
coaches are plus?
This is not about like I don't hear any feels about LaFleur. LaFleur's a fine coach.
I'm trying to hear what you have to say.
I would say, like, Andy Reid,
okay.
Belichick.
Yep.
Trying to think.
Tomlin?
Yes.
Pete Carroll? I like Pete Carroll a lot.
So here's the thing. Like for me, LaFleur is fringe top 10 coach.
Currently active?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But that's not what I wanted to talk about. Because it's neither here nor here. He's your coach. On the other side, let's talk about the type of coach. Because the culture setters are ones that I feel like are the best, but the hardest to acquire. Like, they're the one, like, that's actually the unicorn. It's just the hardest unicorn. It's a unicorn. It's hard to find.
It's not a narwhal.
You can go for the culture setter and miss bad, and it can be ugly quick.
Urban Meyer.
Just like on offense. You can try to hire an offensive guru, and it could be a miss. You can miss on defensive guys. Look at Coach LaFleur. I mean Coach Eberflus. I mean, like, you can miss across the board. You can miss a lot of different ways. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light.
You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light. Also brought to you by J&K Security Solutions. Securing homes and businesses in the Madison area since 1987.
Molly continues live from the Everlight Solar Studio. I have to do it on my paper. There they are. I'm Jim Rutledge. I need to read my name. Well, there I am. I'm Jim Rutledge of Jim, Matt, and Molly.
I'm Jim Rutledge.
He's Alex G. We're in Everlight Solar Studio. We are presented by Coors Light. We did throw out a Siding Unlimited poll question and a couple of them, but we did put one out on Twitter specifically that I want to get to, and then we got Evan Cohen coming up in a little bit. But you can chime in 844-770-3776 on the Carbless Talk and text line. List is more. We asked the question, who does a better job hiring assistant coaches, Dan Campbell with the Lions or Matt LaFleur with the Packers? Right now, 89% of you say Dan Campbell with the Lions. And that came to my head because Mark Tauscher brought up yesterday. And obviously, Mark is a Packers fan, and he's hopeful that the Lions will not be able to replace their coordinators. I am too, obviously, rooting for a team in the division as well. I hope they can't, but I'm not optimistic about it. Like, I think a guy like Dan Campbell is closer to the Mike Vrabel, Mike Tomlin even. Because at this point, like, they were great defensive coordinators, and that's how they got their job. But it's unquestioned, and Vrabel, I think, did it long enough at Tennessee that they set a culture in those places. And they have hired good coordinators, and they've established a way of winning. John Harbaugh has done that. Jim Harbaugh has done that. You wouldn't call them defensive gurus, and you wouldn't call them offensive whiz kids or offensive gurus. You'd call them culture setters.
Right.
And if we brought up a list of coaches through the league, culture setter, I think, is the thinnest. Like, if you look at the hires right now, Aaron Glenn, he's a swing for a culture setter. He's a swing for it. And it's hard to say if it's going to happen. But the reason why I say he's a swing for a culture setter is because he's already said, I'm not calling plays on defense. And so he's saying, I'm going to coach this whole team. And he, at that press conference, kind of went old school. And so he is trying to be a culture setter. He's trying to be Dan Campbell. I'm not saying that, but right, that type of guy. But then let's look at the other hire. Liam Cohen, he's the whiz kid guy. Like, he's trying to be the next Kyle Shanahan, screams the next Adam Gase or Josh McDaniel. But we'll have to wait and see on that.
He looks goofy.
Josh McDaniel, honestly, I think his problem was that he's just an unlikable jerk. Like, I think by all accounts, like, I think that's the problem for him. And that should be ferreted out pretty easy. I think Liam's problem is going to be, like, he's going to have to lead honestly, it was different, but it gave off Eberflus vibes to me of like, he's trying to be your buddy, be a player's right. coach, and like, Eberflus had a nickname for everyone on the team. Like, just dumb stuff like that. And Eberflus also had an acronym.
Yeah, you are so out on acronyms.
So lame.
I don't know. I guess I haven't been a part of an acronym team
I'm
in
so
a long time.
By Urban Meyer acronym, by the way.
You gave it to us on Monday. But still, it makes me feel even worse about Luke Fickell every time you say it.
I know. I don't love it. That's my red flag.
Is it because it's...
What the hell does team stand for?
That's the thing. But it's college. I don't think anyone knows.
I think you can get away with more in college.
I will, not just because he's the Badgers coach. College, you can be a little bit hokier. These are grown men. These are grown-ass men.
Acronyms work for 20 to 22-year-olds.
If
18 to 20-year-olds.
If we had a brand new market manager or someone, program director, whomever, come in, and they just said, I operate under the...
ESPN acronym?
Exactly. the radio acronym. And here's what it stands for. Radio... Always
does
on.
No,
I don't know.
Everything awesome, but spelled with an O.
Yeah, so like,
everyone Spurs potential network.
There you go. So like, again, it's a nightmare. It's such a big swing. So then you have the Saints don't have anyone, right? Nobody. Mike McCarthy said, you know what? I'm gonna coach next
what
year.
Is Mike McCarthy a culture guy? Is that because he's not rah rah?
He smashes watermelons.
What?
You don't remember that?
No, I don't remember the smashing watermelon.
When the Cowboys were really bad 2 years ago, Dak Prescott got hurt. They were on their third backup, Ben DiNucci or whatever. He was trying to get him up for games. I think they beat the Vikings one game. And I think he came in and he like smashed watermelons in a team meeting to get him hyped for a game.
That does... I guess that does check out because he's not like some defensive guru. And he's certainly... Like his offensive scheme is just be more athletic and get open.
Honestly, he's a quarterback guy.
Yeah.
Like, he gets the most out of the quarterback. Like, that's his thing.
He's a football guy, honestly.
But also, like, he's like a floor lifter. You see it all the time in, like, basketball, like a Scott Skiles type, a Billy Donovan type. Like, these guys who, honestly, he's Budenholzer, but he just got the ring. Like, Budenholzer is not a great coach. Like, he's a good coach, and he raises your standards and puts in good processes and can set you up for success. He just got a ring because Kevin Durant's foot was an inch bigger than
yes, 100%.
And I love the Bucks, and I love that ring. But same thing with McCarthy. He honestly was a B plus coach.
Well, and here's the thing, though,
who got an A plus player.
Right, and you talk about that, and where you were talking last segment about the deficiencies that Matt LaFleur has. The big one that stands out to me is like he doesn't have that like rah rah, leadership style, and neither does Jordan Love, and so it kind of leaves this void at offense where it's like, okay, are you just going to outthink everyone?
Football! And that's tough to do. And so, like, that's what we have to figure out. Like, what's LaFleur's next step as a coach? We always talk about Jordan Love, his next step as a quarterback. But what is the next step for Matt LaFleur as a coach? At Canopy Wealth Management, they are a fee-based advisory firm. They don't chase commissions and never back gimmicks or instruments that chase single-day returns or put your long-term goals at risk. The team at Canopy creates strategies that are tailored to your needs and goals. Canopy Wealth Management, care, competence, and clarity aren't just buzzwords. They're a promise. Go to canopy-wealth.com to get started with them today. That's canopy-wealth.com. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly. Evan Cohen joins us next.
Hey, this is Matt's Chicago doppelganger. You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN Madison.
But, like, it seems like you're deferring to someone that's not actually on the show. And she's already your girlfriend.
Friends are people that you're honest with no matter what. So I'm questioning whether or not you actually know how to be friends with someone.
He doesn't need a pat on the back. He's not you.
Well,
who's a good co-host?
Evan Cohen, who co-hosts Unsportsmanlike right here on ESPN Radio.
From Madison to the Big Apple, it's time for Evan Cohen on Jim, Matt, and Molly.
If I'm not mistaken, that's the first time, at least that I've heard that open.
I haven't heard this
one before. Primetime taking some initiative and creating a brand new open for Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike. You can hear Unsportsmanlike every morning, every weekday morning here on ESPN Madison. And obviously Evan having gone to school here at UW-Madison. Are you talking to me, Ryan? Because I'm not hearing anything.
Nope, I'm talking to Evan on the phone. We had him on hold. We lost him, but he's here now.
He is. So, Alex G., Jim Rutledge with you. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly presented by Coors Light, and we're in the Everlight Solar Studio. Thrilled to be joined by Evan Cohen. You had a brand new open created. You'll have to listen next time because Prime did a great job, took the initiative to create a whole new open.
Well, I hear the Sinatra, so you never can go wrong there. So I'm good with that, and I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, that's the care factor that Prime brings to the show. We're talking like a coaching flaw, and I feel like you're a guy because you're a big Belichick guy. I feel like you're great to ask this question because whether it's this coaching cycle or if it's the just coaches in general, it seems like there's maybe three types of coaches, and the culture setter is the hardest to get right. Then there's that offensive guru guy, and then there's maybe the defensive play caller, which honestly seems like the rarest. But if I look at like Belichick, especially after New England, was more of set the culture and then you can replace your assistants. Because we got in the discussion like Dan Campbell is a culture setter, John Harbaugh, and they've been able to, Mike Vrabel, and they've been able to replace their assistants over time and still win. And I think Dan Campbell is one of those guys. LaFleur doesn't feel like one of those guys. But what do you think the hardest coaching hire to make? Is it harder to hire an offensive guy to see if he's going to be a great coach, or is it harder to see if someone's going to be that culture setter, which I think is incredibly rare?
Well, you're going to have to tell me which category this fits into. So I think the hardest hire is the person that's always glass half full and everything's okay when things don't go well. So what do I mean by that? Like, what if the Commanders were bad this year? Like, it's kind of annoying if Dan Quinn is like, oh, everything's great. Like, we're going to be awesome. Like, you guys suck. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, I think about the Miami Dolphins, right? Mike McDaniel, I really root for that guy to do well because it seems like that would be a good push in the right direction in terms of leadership. Like, glass half, I can't say I'm always this way in life, obviously, but for you, Jim, but glass half full, and you're not either. I mean, that's why we mesh well, probably, because we see it the same way of like everything sucks, which is not healthy, right, in any way, shape, or form. But for us, as old men like we are, it is motivating for us, right? Like the Miami Dolphins have a guy in Mike McDaniel, like glass half full, everything's great, like players coach, okay, that's awesome upon arrival and he does well. But then when they're not as good, I mean, like, why? Everything's not great. Like, what are you talking about? LaFleur is an interesting one because I've seen him from afar as glass half full, everything's okay. I've seen them organizationally make tough decisions, right? Obviously, with Rodgers, I think they've made some tough decisions around Jair Alexander. Guys have come and gone, but he's also creative. Like, the Jeff Hafley hire, nobody saw that one coming. So I think maybe the best guy to hire, which I know is the opposite of what you're asking, is the one that kind of fills as many of those buckets as possible and kind of knows who he is. That's why LaFleur is really good and has a chance to be great. Now, if he's not great after this year, I think we're having a different discussion about him. But I think that's a really hard question. I don't think it's one size fits all.
So what you say, if he doesn't do great next year, Packers fans have incredibly high standards for greatness, despite only winning two championships with back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
That was yesterday's show. Evan.
Right. What does greatness look like for Matt LaFleur this year?
Yeah. Okay. So, here's the thing that I would look at with this. Like, let's look at three guys right now, active NFL coaches, all right? Let's look at Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. Let's look at Sean McDermott in Buffalo. And let's look at John Harbaugh in Baltimore. Two of the three, Harbaugh and Tomlin, have won titles, as we know. I believe none of the three should be quote-unquote fired, right? I believe all of the three have had this, fans have a right to have discussions about, is now kind of the time? Does it make sense for us to continue? Like, should Sean McDermott just be the coach of the Saints? Because he clearly is one of the best 32, but is he right for this job? What I think happens if Matt LaFleur and the Packers this year do not win the division, have a top two seed, and or in the conference championship game, and I'm going one step further, and Jordan Love is not a top five MVP finisher, I think there's discussions on ESPN Madison at this time next year, maybe even a couple weeks earlier than this next year, of LaFleur is a great coach. He should be one of 32, but is he right for this job anymore? That sounds nuts. I get that. But when you have that level of quarterback, and by the way, he has a new boss, does he not? Coming up soon?
Yep, as a new president, yep.
So, at fired? Policy. No chance. No chance. A mutual, like, hey, this team called us and is interested in you. Like, do you want us to let you talk to him kind of thing? You know? And maybe I'm nuts in saying this, and maybe you could sit there and say, well, they can't find a better coach than Matt LaFleur, and they may not be able to. I don't like presenting the problem without the solution, but I want to be clear on what I'm saying. All I'm saying is we had that discussion, not that that actually happened.
Talking with Evan Cohen, you can hear him on Sportsmanlike weekday mornings here on ESPN Madison. We were talking the Packers.
Wait, is that unfair what I said just now? Like, what do you guys think of what I just said?
No, literally last segment, because I have a view of, like, LaFleur, and he was getting criticized for his demonstrative nature on the sidelines. He kind of loses his cool at times. Like, LaFleur, I think he has more on the line next year than Jordan Love does. The first one to go will be LaFleur over Jordan Love.
Yeah.
It'll go LaFleur, Love, Goody if they win 10 games next year.
If they win 10 games, if they're jumped all by, three say, of them are safe.
Let's say they get jumped by Chicago.
If they win 10 games,
they're jumped by Chicago and they win 10 games. Let's say they both have 10 and Chicago gets tiebreaker.
It's still going to go. I think all of them will be safe. Don't you agree,
but
Evan?
If none of the other things happen, let's say Jordan Love stays 10th best quarterback and none of the other things happen.
The
conversation is happening.
The thing
Alex.
Is, the Packers don't go all in.
I'm not saying the team. Fans.
I know. Okay, yeah. Fans will be upset about Matt LaFleur. They'll be upset about Jeff Hafley, probably. Let's be honest. They always go after the defensive coordinator. But the thing is, the Packers don't go all in as an organization fast. The Bucks, was it last year, fired Mike Budenholzer, and then they, halfway through the season, make another coaching change. That's not the Green Bay Packers. There isn't somebody at the helm going crazy. They're going to be relaxed.
Because there's no ownership.
Exactly. Right. And I was thinking about that yesterday, and it feels like, to a certain level, that's why the Packers only have two championships with back-to-back.
So let's ask Evan that question. Was basically...
Wait. A couple things on this. Okay. First of all, if you look at those three guys, they're big three with Green Bay. Goody, LaFleur, and Love. Who's the best at their job? Not which job is most important, because Love has the most important job, but who's actually the best at their job? Because I would say Goody is the best at his job amongst those three.
I agree.
I struggle because I put that ownership level of intensity on him, and because I have a real problem with his my guy syndrome.
That's every GM, though.
Yeah.
We just know it here because it's your team.
Right, sure. Every guy.
I have that problem, too, and that's why you're sitting next to the person you're sitting next to.
Everyone has that. I mean, it's a common thing. Like, that's a common knock for all GMs.
Okay, but that doesn't
but
mean he can't
still
raise
have
above
to
it.
Bring that up, Jim.
True, he is, but I mean, like, that's not the disqualifier. Like, and I'm not even a Goody guy, but out of those three, like, Jordan Love, there's a lot of questions about him. And Coach LaFleur, he may have reached the ceiling.
And I think Goody has shown his hand, who he is. He's going to...
Put that up on the poll. Put that up, Prime.
All right, that's a Siding Unlimited poll question. You can ask... Evan Cohen is specifically asking for a Siding Unlimited poll question. We'll post that. And your question is, Evan, who is the best...
Of the Packers' big three, which one is the best at their job?
Okay, so we'll poll that. And I want to get to yesterday's... Well, actually, yesterday we're talking about the Packers, and it's just weird... 30 years of quarterback play at a Hall of Fame level, two rings. When you look at the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Steelers, there's been teams that have been able to win titles in a tight bundle. And one reason could be not having an owner. Maybe that's it, Evan. But I said maybe if they had just figured out how to keep Mike Holmgren around, and maybe they would have won more. But what is, like, from afar, what is
well,
your...
Well, you can't say that because... I mean, you can say that, but I mean, McCarthy won. So, I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, but Holmgren got to the Super Bowl with Seattle, so maybe. It wouldn't go from Holmgren to McCarthy, though. It went Ray Rhodes, Mike Sherman.
So, no, I understand.
Yeah, so, like, in that window, you have, like, an extra 5 years of Holmgren, and then maybe goes Holmgren to McCarthy. So, from afar, why do you think the Packers have two Super Bowl rings despite having a golden ticket twice and having a 30-year run with franchise QBs?
Okay, I think the owner thing is a part of it because sometimes rash decisions aren't good decisions. Sometimes they can be, right? I think when you look at the dynastic quarterbacks of our lifetime, there is a level of humbleness that players, now players loved Favre, let's not get that twisted, right?
Yep.
But there's a level of humbleness that I think allows for sustainability that maybe the two guys in Green Bay didn't have. You hear stories about Brady, whether you love Brady or not, and I love him, where random dude walks into the locker room and for the first time, and he says, "Hi, I'm Tom. Nice to meet you. What's your name?" And they're like, "Yeah, I kind of know you're Tom. Like, what do you mean?" Right. Right? Next time you guys have James White on or any former Badger that played for the Pats, you can ask them that about Brady, right? Mahomes, there's a level of humble. I mean, think about all of this. Like, there's nothing negative to say about Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But then you start thinking about some of the people around him. It's not that there's negative things to say. They've said and done controversial things, not illegal, not immoral. I'm saying controversial one way or another, right?
Yeah.
And he stays calm. He's a straight line. He's so humble in his greatness that I just wonder the humility of the greatest. Was that there in Green Bay? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was, and I don't know that. Maybe Tausch could tell you something different. Maybe Bulaga could tell you something different. But from afar, that looks different than what Brady and Mahomes look like.
Well, yeah, and you have two guys who've, throughout their career, had big moments of you know, I get my own locker room, I am going on this retreat, I don't have to come to camp, I don't have to do this, that, the other thing. They both had off-the-field issues, and they didn't fire up the crowd quite the same way. We were talking about it yesterday. Holmgren was a hard-nosed guy, and as soon as he leaves, Brett Favre, his numbers dip, he gets out of rhythm, that's where he gets his own locker room for a short while, and he becomes bigger than the organization. And without an owner and without somebody who is laying the law, it does feel a little bit like, with those two quarterbacks in particular, you might be getting too big for your britches. Now, what I feel good about with Jordan Love, and leads me to believe that they can still win a Super Bowl with Jordan Love, despite I don't think he's going to come out to be an Aaron Rodgers or a Brett Favre, is that...
But he has that humility.
He doesn't have... Exactly. Like. He doesn't have that bigger, better than you level. And I was just curious...
But here's the thing. He's not good enough to have that. So if he becomes good enough to have that, how does he handle that? Because, you know, Brady really never did that, to my knowledge. There were kind of hints of that at the end, which is what frustrated Belichick. And Mahomes hasn't even come close to that at this point. And I don't believe, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't believe having a lot of money means you act bigger than thou because you're richer than thou. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, you know, they're both actual sports owners right now. Mahomes owns a piece of the Royals, and Brady owns a piece of the Raiders. But they never acted like, oh, I'm better or bigger because I'm richer. Unlike Rutledge, who I know, oh my God,
right.
Man, people are shining shoes now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Amen.
I want to play this clip from...
Does Primetime still do your laundry, or how does that work,
Jim? He actually just cleans my shoes now. It's winter. I move the laundry out. He just cleans my shoes when I come in. I don't want any.
What about dry cleaning? Does he do your dry cleaning?
That would be great. Let's add that to the list.
Oh, yeah. I can add that to the list. Awesome. Yeah, my hands just feel like salt every day.
Yeah, I want you to dry clean them.
I'll dry clean. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Sir.
Figure out how to dry clean and whatever that means, and then
do they still give out Oreos at dry cleaners?
What?
Huh?
Is that not a thing?
That's never a thing.
No, the dry
I've never
cleaner.
Heard of that
I grew up in a
life.
Town of 8,000.
At the dry cleaner?
Yeah. So there were two different dry cleaners in Plymouth, Wisconsin, my town of 8,000. And both of them gave out Oreos to the kids when you'd go in with your parents to drop off suits and whatnot.
Right,
is that not a big thing?
844-770-3776. Have you ever gotten candy or an Oreo or anything from a dry cleaner? I would love to know if
Wait,
she's
but
the only
Jim,
one.
The hard candy that's like wrapped is different than a random
Yeah, true. Actually,
Oreo.
An Oreo.
Yeah.
An Oreo cookie specifically.
It was Oreo cookies.
Were they like super stale? Like
no.
In a dry cleaner, they have to be super dry.
There's no way my wife would let my kids take a random cookie from the dry cleaner. Even if we went to that dry cleaner all the time.
But it's not.
It seems unsanitary.
Did you grow up in a small town?
I'm not saying. I am 44 years old. That does not seem that weird to me. Yeah, people handing you stuff that you just eat. Yeah, that's what being 44 was like back in the, you know, back back in the 80s. That's not something that happens now. I'm saying my wife now, with our children, would absolutely tell them you cannot eat that. I'll back her up.
They would be like open.
Yeah, it was. They were like in a. They were in like a Tupperware style container. These were like. See, this was for the exact purpose of like giving the kids something to be excited
like
about
a
when you win.
A sucker or something.
Wait,
like,
I don't understand. Yeah. Your family never told you don't take candy from strangers.
I wasn't going in alone. I was four. I don't know.
Did they have glasses?
Right, but that makes it worse. So your parents are actually the ones giving you the candy from the strangers.
Yes, it's from my parents. Then I don't know why this is a big deal. It was a safe Oreo, and it was a given to me, and I'm a kid. I'm not going to say no to chocolate.
Yeah, what's...
Right, of course not, but your parents should say no to you getting chocolate from random dry cleaners.
Just for the setting the precedent of you can't just take unwrapped candy from...
And I love Jim. Jim, I love how G says... Is that not still a thing? No, it was never a thing.
Yeah, never. Yeah,
I didn't know that. I thought that clearly, I haven't been to a dry cleaner in my adult life.
I was just
going
to say, like, you have not been to a dry cleaner.
My suit is from a box store nearby.
That place is full of chemical. Like, if you really looked into this, like, you ate toxic food because those places are just beaming with chemicals. And it's not a place you want to spend any time.
I'm heading over to the dry cleaner now. I just want to be clear.
Right, good.
Ironically, I just brought some Oreos from upstairs. I forgot I bought them at Costco, and I brought a sleeve upstairs. So I'm not going to hand them off to people that come to my house. Though,
are we close enough? Could I accept an Oreo from you, Jim?
Yeah, but it's at my house.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't bring them here because you guys would eat them all.
That is a ridiculous statement. That is a ridiculous question. You're going to equate you accepting an Oreo from somebody you literally work with for years to the random dry cleaner who you don't know?
My mom had been going there for years. We're effectively friends at a certain point. Small towns are a big deal. Like, you don't understand.
Friends,
you know,
the dry
everyone.
Cleaner.
You know everyone. I went to get brunch with my pastor one day, and I got stopped by all 8 tables at a diner. You just know everyone in a small town.
How small is your town?
8,000 people. It was kind of a shocking situation that everyone
that
seemed, stopped.
Is that normal to get brunch with your pastor? Like, as a kid?
Again.
First time coming back from college, it's, you know, there wasn't anything going on.
I did not do that either. My town had 11,000 people, and none of these things happened.
Was it close to a bigger city?
Cedarburg? Yeah, I guess near Milwaukee. I don't know. I just think you had a different... You can't keep telling stories about, like,
you're
that's the normal
guy.
Wisconsin.
You really
upbringing.
Are an interesting guy.
Like, yeah.
Like, you guys weren't a part of your high school trap shooting team? What are you talking about?
Oh, goodness.
Trap shooting? What's that mean?
It's the sporting clays. So you say pull,
oh,
it throws
yeah.
a little frisbee out.
I know what that is.
Yeah.
The school gave you guns?
No, I was not.
It didn't give us guns, okay. But we had a space where it was okay to use them.
The dry cleaner gave them the guns.
Exactly.
Prime time. Good line. Well done.
Thank you.
That was really good.
Yeah. This is so derailed. I wanted to get one Bucks question in, Evan, because today you didn't list the Bucks as a team that needs to make a trade, but earlier this year, and Prime, good producer he is, has the audio of you throwing flowers at the feet of the Milwaukee Bucks.
I think the Milwaukee Bucks are going to win the NBA championship, and Dame Lillard's going to be the MVP of the
Whoa.
NBA.
Go on.
Ooh.
So I think they're going to have the year this year that everyone thought they were going to have last year.
Okay.
I think they're pretty damn good, and I think the acquisitions they've made, like, around the margins are actually pretty good, and I think there's also a clear cut, this is it if you don't do it this year.
Now, that I agree with. You had Zach LaVine from the Bulls as one of the Bulls moving LaVine as one of the trades to be done. I would love, and I've seen rumors of it, LaVine to Milwaukee. But why didn't you put the Bucks on that list? Because I think you're right in the other part that this whole thing could blow up if they don't at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, they're pretty good despite their rough start, right? They're 26-19. Remember, they were not good early on. They're probably going to hover around that 3-5 seed right now. I think it's pretty safe to say probably more 4-5 than 3 at this point. And in a weird way, if the Cavs are the one seed, even though I think the Cavs are awesome, the Bucks probably would rather play the Cavs than the Celtics or Knicks, if I had to guess. Maybe I'm wrong, in that second round, assuming they win their first round matchup. I think the Bucks-Zach LaVine thing is more of the feelings that I'm getting, and I hate to even say this because I really like this guy, and I think he's probably one of the most underrated athletes in the history of Wisconsin sports, but the feelings that I'm getting that Chris Middleton may not physically be able to do what he previously has done in the role that he's in, right? So, like, he could go to another team and be a great sixth man, let's say, as he's doing right now with the Bucks, he's not intended to be their sixth man, right?
Right.
So I think if you're going to say, hey, we need, meaning the Bucks in this case, we need the Middleton role because Middleton can't provide that role, who's gettable that's not disruptible? And that would be a guy like Zach LaVine.
And I think he would fit fantastic. Evan, really appreciate you hopping on. Josh and Sun Prairie, not a fan of you calling your shot on poll questions, though. So, dude is a tool, is what Josh and Sun Prairie said.
Me?
So, no.
Evan. Yeah, that's yeah, what you yeah. you looked at me and smiled. Well, I got confused.
Yeah, well, because you're my co-host here. We're having a conversation.
I asked for a poll question?
Yeah, yeah. So I think Josh is just riding or dying with us. But Josh, we're okay with it. We like the question from
Evan. It's a hell of a poll question.
It is.
That's the kind of poll question. So, if I know Tausch, and I know Tausch, Tausch will see that poll question. Make sure he sees it. Tausch will see that poll question, and that'll be a big theme on Wildy and Tausch tomorrow if he shows up.
So the Siding Limited poll question right now, Evan Cohen has a question for Packers fans. Which member of the big three for the Packers is best at their job? Love, LaFleur, or Goody? It is 53% Goody, 43% LaFleur, and 4% Jordan Love.
That's
right now.
Crazy.
And Josh and Sun Prairie, that's not interesting to you that the majority of Packers fans that listen to ESPN Madison, Jim, Matt, and Molly, think that Jordan Love is the weakest link of their team.
Now,
of their core, of their team.
That I find that fascinating. And also, Ryan, our psychedelic advisor, just chimes in and says, Evan is tight. So you got backers out there, too. Did you know our show had a psychedelic advisor?
I
think that's Alex G.
Yeah, well, no. He's my advisor. He's my personal advisor. Yeah. He's my shaman in life, really.
Yeah, he had lunch with him and the pastor.
They exchange Oreos together.
The advisor and the dry cleaner, and they had Oreos for dessert.
Right, double stuffed.
Yeah.
All right, Evan, thank you. That's Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light.
Hey, this is Matt's Chicago Doppelganger. You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN Madison.